This is Agriculture Today.
The impact of higher energy prices and higher fertilizer prices had a negative impact on sediment, but there was other factors going on here, and one of them that we didn't talk about in the report that's obviously was going on is the bridge payments were going out.
On the recent Purdue University CME Ag Economy Barometer, Dr. Michael Langemeyer, director of the Center for Commercial Agriculture.
And the bridge payments, if you average those for a corn soybean farm, were about $35 per acre, and so they were rather sizable, and so that probably boosted sediment. But also, if you look at corn and soybean prices, particularly corn prices were up. If you look at the time we surveyed in March compared to the time we surveyed in February, and one of the interesting things about corn prices is it's not perfectly correlated with energy prices, but it is positively correlated with energy prices. And so because the energy prices went up, corn prices went up a little bit, and I think that offsets some of the negativity regarding the higher energy and fertilizer prices. Another thing I think is important to point out is a lot of producers probably already had purchased their fertilizer, and so this isn't going to be quite as much impact for those people. There is people that hadn't, and then also I would think that people that are going to put some of the fertilizer on in season, they probably hadn't bought all of that. And so I'm not saying the impact of the fertilizer prices is neutral, but it's not as big as you might think. Because people had probably bought quite a bit of their fertilizer before the war started.
Now, that Purdue University CME Ag Economy Barometer showing farmers' sentiment improving in the month of March, but rising input costs remain a growing concern. The improvement, again, driven largely by a jump in the Future Expectations Index. Current Conditions Index also increased, though at a slower pace. Even with the gain, though, sentiment remains below levels seen earlier this year. And he mentioned fertilizer. Well, the reopening of the Strait of Hormuz may ease fertilizer supply concerns, but it doesn't resolve deeper issues in the global market. Analysts at StoneX say that while a ceasefire allows for potential movement, actual vessel traffic remains limited and uncertainty high. Dozens of fertilizer vessels remain staged in the Persian Gulf, and the analysis shows that roughly 931,000 metric tons of urea, along with phosphate, ammonia, and sulfur, waiting to move. Vessel owners remain cautious. Crossings have not increased meaningfully. A new federal rule limiting certain commercial driver license could reduce available truck capacity, raising concerns about freight movement during a key ag season. Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration finalized changes that restrict eligibility for non-domiciled CDLs, potentially removing thousands of drivers from the system. Now, that rule took effect on March 16th, requires stricter verification of immigration status for drivers who do not reside in a U.S. state. Officials say the change improves safety, restoring integrity to the CDL system. For ag, though, the timing critical comes as spring planting ramps up and the increased demand for hauling fertilizer, seed, and equipment. And that reduced driver supply could increase freight cost this season. Finally, U.S. pork exports holding steady in February. Beef exports declined. Variety meat demand continued to surge. It's Agriculture Today.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts around here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
Let's talk about cotton research. Cotton Incorporated funds more than 400 ag research projects every year. They study cotton, engineering, economic development, entomology, agronomy, pathology, variety selection, expanded cotton seed uses. And that's just the start. You grow the cotton research and promotion program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
General story, in my opinion, for the cattle market is that we're coming into this week after having a last week that the cash cattle trade sharply higher.
Bob Maurer, Manduca Trading, Chicago.
Northern trade was somewhere between 240 and 245, dressed around 380 to 385, with the southern trade around 245. So strong cash action, that's been a bullish driver, and I think that momentum is helping us start stronger this week. Futures momentum, like I said, remains very strong. Fund buying continues to support the market, and the beef supplies in general, with the weekly slaughter running below year-ago levels, and the beef production, that continues to trail last year. So just in terms of the supply side of the equation for beef, obviously that's going to lean towards the bullish side of the equation. Demand for beef remains resilient. We're not too far from the seasonal uptick that we would typically see. I mean, we're in the beginning of April, so hopefully things start turning warmer more consistently, which would be great. And then also JBS workers, they're returning to their positions there at Greeley, so that removes one uncertainty from the market. Working a bit against cattle prices, beef, box beef, that kind of softened late in the week. So we need to keep an eye on those prices, make sure they're sustainable, make sure that the output is going to turn a profit for the packers. The market is watching whether the futures premiums can continue to be justified. And just technically speaking, we start seeing the blurbs out there about the market being overbought. Although in my long history in these markets, markets can stay overbought or oversold for quite some time before there's any kind of reaction. So we'll just see how that plays out. Neutral side of the equation for the beef market, carcass weights are heavy, but really everybody knows that, and it just has not been enough to offset the tight numbers. And then the export sales were decent, but not a major driver, but we'll take the decent part. So basically the summary, stronger cash trade, tighter beef supplies, continued fund buying, working on the bull side of the equation, something we'll keep an eye on over the near term here, working against that a bit would be the softer box beef and maybe, technicians saying that this market looks a little overdone to the upside. Over in hogs, working on the bull side of the equation, maybe helping to come off those recent swing lows is the U.S. export demand. That's been a decent, move. Summer demand expectations around the corner. The market's still sitting near an important technical support here, like I mentioned earlier, or just a bit ago. You know, we're sitting at the low end of the range here, and the market was able to sustain some kind of bullish move off of those recent swing lows and prices that we saw about a month ago or so. Pork cutout values showed some improvement. Packer margins have improved. That's working for the market. And then working against it a bit is production remains large. The spec funds have been trimming their long positions, so a bit of lack of conviction, let's put it that way, or some profit taking up here maybe. Cash hog prices and the lean hog index have been a bit on the softer side. And then China continues warning about hog oversupply. So if they want to eradicate some of their oversupply, it might hit its way, work its way into the world market, which would provide competition for us. So we'll see how that all plays out. But net, really, again, for hogs, you got the strong export demand, improving pork values. Again, the prospect of summer seasonal strength. Working against that a bit has been the softer cash hog prices, large production, the reduced fund length, and then, like I said, ongoing concern about potential Chinese oversupply. So a number of factors. Market did hold up technically, in my opinion. The June lean hog futures shook off that recent test of the 104 area. We're sitting about 107.70, so it's showing some technical strength at the moment.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Ben Scott, Scott Land Company in Dimmitt, Texas. We have literally at Scott Land Company sold thousands of acres of irrigated land, dry land, and CRP in Texas, New Mexico, Oklahoma, and Colorado. Look at our website, scottlandcompany.com. Give us a call at 800-933-9698. That'll get Ben Scott. We really need listings on all types of property.
The planting season is right around the corner. You can't afford to be down when it's time to go. Wiley Implement and Spray Center, your Case IH dealer, can get your equipment ready for the season and keep you running. We also have a great selection of new and used planters for the upcoming season. Depend on Wiley's 13 locations across Texas and Oklahoma. Find us at WileySprayers.com.
I'm Scott Wiley. We'll try hard to earn your business, but even harder to keep it. That's it. That's all.
Ag News now. Agriculture Today.
I think if you look at the net returns, particularly for crop producers, they're very tight.
Talking the Purdue University CME Group Ag Economy Barometer, Dr. Michael Langemeyer, Director for the Center for Commercial Ag.
And when you see relatively low net returns like this, they have a tendency to cover owner withdrawals and principal payments before they purchase a machinery. That's just a natural way to think about cash flow. And usually there's not enough cash flow left over to seriously consider buying machinery in 2026. That was also the case in 2025. And so this index has been relatively low for the last 18 months. It's really been ranging from about 50 to 60 for the last 18 months. It would take substantially higher prices than what we're seeing right now. It would probably, if you look at something like the IFR and price distribution tool, which kind of looks at the probability of prices, prices would probably have to be in that upper quartile. There's a probability, a 25% chance that prices could be high enough that you'd see more interest in buying machinery. Just to give you some example, some idea of the magnitude, if somebody hadn't bought their fertilizer and they were buying quite a bit of their fertilizer under these new prices, break-even price for corn would be about 10 to 15 cents per bushel higher. A year ago, the biggest concern was input cost, and it was about 40%. So it certainly has grown here in the last few months. It was at 44% in February, so not exactly a small percentage. And then a further increase in March. I think it's going to stay around that 40 to 45% for the foreseeable future. And this is true for even for livestock producers, because if you are a feeder producer or someone that finishes cattle, one of your big expenses buying the cattle, buying the feeders, buying the calves or buying the feeders, and that's included in aggregate input price indices. And so input costs are going to be a concern for both crop and livestock producers moving forward. There's also human resource or labor risk, legal risk, and strategic risk. They tend to be 10% or below. And so the big three, which is typical, financial, marketing, and production. But when we've asked this question in the past, marketing usually is the first. And so the fact that financials, the first really is an indicator again of how tight those margins are, particularly for the crop sector. We have a chart in the report that looks at the percentage that talked to someone about solar leases going back all the way to early 24. And, a couple of those months, it was close to 20%. Close to 20% of the respondents had been approached by somebody. And that was before the 24 election. And so we're really trying to gauge here, at least that's one of the things I was trying to gauge, did that fall off the cliff, in terms of the percentage that had been approached since the 24 election? And no, not really. It's still 12%. It was 11% in January 25 and 12% this month. And so there's still a lot of people being approached by solar companies about the potential of leasing ground for solar. One of the things that was interesting in the results this month, and we didn't put this in a report, but we did ask the question about what was the rate, and we had a lot of different buckets. It was all over the place. And so that's one of the reasons I didn't put in the report, because it's hard to figure out exactly what's going on there. There was quite a few below 500. There was quite a few above 1250. There was about 30%. They were above 1250, but it was a very, very wide difference between the high end and the low end in terms of those rates. And I think the way I interpret that is that probably these solar leases are, people are being approached on these solar leases all over the Corn Belt and Great Plains.
It's Agriculture Today.
Purple Wave Auction remains the trusted leader in online equipment auctions. What makes the difference is you. You are part of our growing global community that continues to trust Purple Wave with the equipment that builds and feeds America. This trust placed in us by our community, from construction to ag producers and fleet drivers, brings great equipment opportunities to their next owners. Join the Purple Wave community today. PurpleWave.com.
Manage your risk and take advantage of opportunities with StoneX. Utilizing StoneX's global presence to provide the best in market intelligence, a vast portfolio of risk management and marketing products, and a team of brokers who specialize in working with those in agriculture, StoneX provides the resources you need to make the best possible decisions. Learn more about the StoneX Advantage. Call Donna Hughes at 214-613-1688. There's substantial risk to futures and options trading. Not all products are suitable for all producers.
This is Agriculture Today.
We're going to be the first test site for the network that the USDA is setting up across the country, the proving ground, they call it. We may call it test site, but for Precision Ag, we're going to be the first test site, and Grand Farm is going to be the national program manager for the other test sites. That's a big deal.
North Dakota Senator John Hoeven in Fargo, North Dakota, launching the National Proving Grounds Network for Ag Tech.
2019, so 7 years ago, as I mentioned earlier, Grant Sky was born. We had Secretary Sonny Perdue, USDA Secretary at that time, came out and he cut the ribbon and Grand Farm was born. 7 years later, about six, a little over 6 years later, another Secretary of Agriculture comes out here, Brooke Rollins, and of course sees what you're doing. We had her out here last year. We had her at NDSU. Great event at NDSU. She comes out and sees Grand Farm. I don't know what she expected to see, but she was impressed. And yet they had demonstrations all over the place out there, and she's going around like a trooper outside. The wind's going about 100 miles an hour. But she goes through all that. She wants to see everything, tractors driving themselves around, everything, just crazy good stuff in here, great event. And then she sends Scott Hutchins out, and Scott sees it, and he's the guy that's driving their ag tech initiative, their national ag tech initiative. So thanks to the vision of Secretary of Ag Brooke Rollins and Scott Hutchins, Undersecretary, they say, hey, these guys got a model here that's pretty amazing. And we want to develop this precision ag or ag tech across the country. We don't have to recreate the wheel. Why don't we take the model that they've developed here and take it national? And that's exactly what they're doing. So thanks to the vision of Secretary Rollins and Undersecretary Hutchins, that's why we are going to be the first test site and the national program manager. Now, that model, essentially, we've put together over the last, actually, not 6 years, probably the last 3 years or so. So I'm on Ag Appropriations. We've secured about $11 million for what we call the Ag Cooperative Agreement. There are three members in the Ag Cooperative Agreement. NDSU, the best, finest school of agriculture in the country. ARS, Ag Research Services, which is located at NDSU and one of the largest ARS centers located at a university, at a land-grant university in the country, and Grand Farm. Those are the three partners in our Ag Tech Cooperative, funded with about $11 million. And what do they do? Well, if you think about it, there's two aspects of funding for ag research. Again, we fund all these through ag appropriations. First is ARS. ARS, Ag Research Services, that's USDA's research, okay? So we fund that. That's the research they do, ARS, Ag Research Service, USDA. Then NIFA, which is a National Institute for Food and Agriculture, that's the money that we put out to the universities. So, for example, this past year, we provided about $50 million to NDSU and ARS right here. That's about what we worked to appropriate last year. So it's a big number, and it's a big number every year. So these guys, so Brooke and Scott say, okay, we want to drive ag tech, precision ag across the country. Here's some guys have a model where Grand Farm is working with ARS and NDSU, ARS funding, NIFA funding, and they're developing a great test site, and they're interfacing the specialty that Greg and Brian and these guys have is their ability to understand technology and to bring companies that are great tech companies but don't know squat about agriculture, or some that are in ag already, bring them out here, and this is the test site, this is the proving ground where they bring it all together.
It's Agriculture Today.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts round here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
Let's talk about cotton research. Cotton Incorporated funds more than 400 ag research projects every year. They study cotton, engineering, economic development, entomology, agronomy, pathology, variety selection, expanded cotton seed uses. And that's just the start. You grow the cotton research and promotion program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
You know, we had kind of a twofold issue with the responses. I think the response rate was something like 37%. It was the lowest in quite a while, if not ever.
Mike Castle is senior commodity economist with StoneX on USDA's first look at acreage.
And at the same time, a fair amount of these responses came in before the war on Iran even kicked off, so fertilizer prices had not rallied yet. And that's kind of what I tried to highlight, was just how much nitrogen affordability has eroded here in the last month. You know, prices today look certainly a lot different than they did at the start of March, you know, when this survey went out. So that's really just reflecting farmers' intentions as of the beginning of March. And, you know, some of the responses did come in a little later. And thankfully, we did have a good fall anhydrous run. A lot of folks had their spring needs booked, but if you didn't, I do expect to lose some acres from here. This is just my own personal opinion, but I do think that 95.3 will probably be our biggest acreage print of the year. And I think that's, you know, probably a part of why corn was able to hold on to some ground yesterday. Obviously, again, kind of selling off, I really think, more outside pressure here today. And that's not to say that the fundamentals aren't heavy. They certainly are. Anything above 2 billion carryout is heavy. It's fairly ugly, right? But again, demand's quite strong. We're starting to see more policy support. If we could get to a point where we could see E15 sales year round and actually get the infrastructure to sell E15 year round, and, you know, not just in certain places, not just the Iowa leading the charge there, it would certainly be supportive of demand. And I do think, you know, there is the potential not just for losing some acres here on the corn side of things. I think, you know, just based on how the weather has been here the last, call it, month or two, you know, yesterday's prospective plantings, all wheat acres at just under 43.8 million, extremely small, right? Way smaller than expected, you know, by about a million. And the expectations were pretty small in general. So Southern Plains, obviously, a lot of this wheat not looking great coming into the spring. If you didn't have your, you know, nitrogen and phosphate needs booked ahead of time or put that top dress on over the winter, if you didn't buy it and you have to go book it to do it this spring, you're really not incentivized to do so. So I think we may lose some acres there as well. Certainly a year where you could see more acres getting grazed out or switching to something like a Milo. You know, or whatever other spring crop we need. I think, you know, people are certainly looking for alternatives with where input prices are today. And I certainly can't blame them. And the wheat side of things is where it honestly looks the worst. Just because, you know, in 2022, when we saw this huge rally in the fertilizer market, we had these all-time high prices. We also got a massive rally in the wheat market, right? Because of how important the Black Sea region as a whole is to global wheat supply. We're not getting that this time around, right? Your scissor prices run higher. And, you know, obviously we have improved on grain prices a bit here, probably higher than a lot of folks would have expected coming into this spring. But they're still not good, right? There's no good way to sugarcoat that. Affordability looks ugly. So I will say, again, I think it would be heavy if we get that 95.3 planted. But I don't expect to see us stay that high. I don't think we're going to have this situation like last year where, you know, March acreage, you know, this report, we were basically the exact same at 95.3 last year, but we picked up another 3.5 million acres into final. And I don't think we see that happen this year, largely because of that uptick in inputs, not just on the fertilizer side, but diesel as well.
It's Agriculture Today.
This has been Scott, Scott Land Company in Dimmitt, Texas. We have literally at Scott Land Company sold thousands of acres of irrigated land, dry land, and CRP in Texas, New Mexico, Oklahoma, and Colorado. Look at our website, scottlandcompany.com. Give us a call at 800-933-9698. That'll get Ben Scott. We really need listings on all types of property.
The planting season is right around the corner. You can't afford to be down when it's time to go. Wiley Implement and Spray Center, your Case IH dealer, can get your equipment ready for the season and keep you running. We also have a great selection of new and used planters for the upcoming season. Depend on Wiley's 13 locations across Texas and Oklahoma. Find us at WileySprayers.com.
I'm Scott Wiley. We'll try hard to earn your business, but even harder to keep it. That's it. That's all.
Ag News now. Agriculture Today.
Feeder supply starts to change if we see more available cattle.
Kansas State beef cattle specialist Justin Wagner.
We'll begin to take those cattle and reduce those exit weights. And in my opinion, I think what this scenario has taught us in the industry is we can actually carry some of these cattle to heavier exit weights, especially now in a pretty favorable cost of gain or corn price scenario, right? So there's a lot of factors that are complicated in terms of how many days on feed do we take? You know, what's the cost to refill that pen of cattle, you know, relative to those feeding costs and all those other factors that we've talked about. But I think that's an important consideration in my own personal opinion. I think we may see those days on feed come down slightly, but I think as an industry, we are certainly entering an area where we have cattle that we know we can carry those additional days on feed. We can hang those additional pounds in terms of that carcass that's out there. And so we may see those soften a little bit is my opinion, but we're certainly going to stay in an area where we're certainly going to see these bigger cattle continue to be marketed. As we've alluded to here several times, that cattle inventory supply and feeder calf supply is really a critical issue. You know, I think as you talk to many cattle feeders, you know, look at the difference in terms of 23,000 head of steers in these feedlots and 15,000 head of heifers. That's 8,000 fewer heifers, right? And we could go back and do some month-in comparisons, right? But that's a very strong number of heifers that are still entering the feedlot segment in terms of that 15,000 number that's there. So, but certainly the cattle inventory supply is a big part of that discussion, I think, right now. So there's always a number in a few months that will oftentimes kind of pique my interest, especially this month. I think seeing cattle go, you know, kind of break 1550 on the steers on that average, I think that's a number that jumps out to me that I was a little surprised to see that one go that high. And the heifers really approaching that 1,400 pound benchmark. These would be some of the historically the highest exit weights that we've seen in 35 years of this data set. So they would be, you know, these are very high exit weights in terms of this data set. So just those are the two numbers in this month's closeout that I would say, okay, wow, I'm surprised that they're, you know, maybe as high as what they are, but they're certainly knocking on the door some historic values for us. The focus on feedlots is actually available on that website. It has its own webpage where you can view all of the closeout months. I think we take those back several years as well, depending on what we can fit in the archive pages. But in addition to that, we also disseminate the focus on feedlots just via a simple email listserv. So if listeners would like to have that report come directly to their inbox each month, all they need to do is send me an email at jwagon@ksu.edu, or my contact information is also listed on ksubeef.org, and we can get that report to where that comes directly to your inbox each month.
But how heavy can we continue to grow these cattle?
You know, that's a great question. I think it's one the industry is really starting to trying to figure out right now. That's a common question of, you know, where is that ceiling in terms of those exit weights? I think, you know, more broadly, you start to think about the situation that that really has set this up, right? You mentioned from an economic perspective, one of the tightest cattle feeder supplies that we have in terms of cattle inventory. And I think that's a big factor behind cattle feeder, you know, putting on additional days on feed, but also carrying these cattle to heavier exit weights. Also have very strong demand in the industry too, in terms of beef. So, you know, those two factors themselves, the tighter inventory supply, feeding cost of gain with corn prices, then, you know, those are all moving in a direction that's certainly favorable for a cattle feeder to look at, you know, carrying these cattle extra days and maybe adding a few extra pounds on them as well.
It's Agriculture Today.
Purple Wave Auction remains the trusted leader in online equipment auctions. What makes the difference is you. You are part of our growing global community that continues to trust Purple Wave with the equipment that builds and feeds America. This trust placed in us by our community, from construction to ag producers and fleet drivers, brings great equipment opportunities to their next owners. Join the Purple Wave community today. PurpleWave.com.
Manage your risk and take advantage of opportunities with StoneX. Utilizing StoneX's global presence to provide the best in market intelligence, a vast portfolio of risk management and marketing products, and a team of brokers who specialize in working with those in agriculture, StoneX provides the resources you need to make the best possible decisions. Learn more about the StoneX Advantage. Call Donna Hughes at 214-613-1688. There's substantial risk to futures and options trading. Not all products are suitable for all producers.